And good evening. I'm hoping this is all working. This is Andy Yates. This is Andy Yates for the Andy Weiss Show on Beetroot Radio, community radio for Rushton and Nen Valley. And don't forget, you can find us online and on mobile. But if you want to contact me, actually, I'm not so I can shut this up. When I came in tonight, the studio was empty, which is all good, but I'm computer challenged, as you may know. So I just had to set everything up, and I think I've got everything going, and I hope so, because I got a great show for you tonight on Beetroot Radio, community radio for Rushton and the Nen Valley. So I'm thinking, oh, I might actually have a show. So either I'm going to spend the next 2 hours talking to myself, or I'm going to spend them talking to you, my listener, about some really interesting stuff. Now, I'll tell you, I did my show last week, and I was quite pleased with it. I did cryptids, as you know, and then I did a global update and all that sort of stuff. And that can be a little bit depressing, I suppose, a little bit negative. And then I went home, and my wife said to me, I said, I wish you hadn't done all that stuff or whatever. And I said, why? And she said, well, it's been such a nice day. Because, of course, last week was the royal wedding, which I didn't talk about. And what she said was there were 2 billion people hooked in, tuned in, whatever, like this, to that show. To that event. And, of course, it was all about peace and love and happiness and all this kind of stuff like that, no matter whether you consider it a facade or not. The intention was good, I guess. And if assuming half the people there were actually pro all this stuff, then you've got a billion people who are all sending out that message of love and peace and happiness and all that stuff. And that's got to be a good thing. And then, as she mentioned about, well, think of the energy that that will be sending out. And I'm like, yeah, that's a great question. The energy that would be being sent out. So I thought, well, you know what? What I might start, what I was going to do is, oh, I'm going to do talk about energy. And because I want to, with my show, eventually get into some of the more, what could you say? More of the edge stuff, more of the extreme stuff, and so on and so forth. But I do remember when I first went to some kind of sort of holistic healing institution, some college that did this kind of thing, where they taught a lot of stuff which people would have called a bit woo-woo, new age and stuff like that. And I came from a background of being in the military. I was a martial arts guy. I was an IT guy. So you can't get much more grounded than that, if you like. And I was just, and when I went into this thing, this, you know, teaching college and so on, and I got fascinated with hypnotherapy, actually, because that was a pseudoscience and it was to do with the mind, and that was okay by me, sort of thing, because I was fascinated and wanted to learn about it because that's the way I'm built. And I'm surrounded by all these people, but after a time, you kind of get a little bit of, I don't know, you get inured to it. You get a little bit less resistant to it and so on and so forth, and more accepting, or at least more open-minded. So at least you consider some of these what may have seemed outlandish things before, and then you start to open your mind. And that's what I'm asking you, my listener, to do, is just, I've mentioned this before, open that little trapdoor in your mind, let some of this stuff in. You don't have to accept it. I ask you, please don't reject it. Just push it to one side and say, hey, I don't subscribe to that right now. But because you may find down the road, something comes along, and then you suddenly think, oh my God, that's what that guy was talking about. That's what that idiot on the radio, Andy Y, that's what he was on about. Now I get it. Now I understand. And that's particularly important in the realm of energy, because energy, we're learning more about this stuff every day. And we're talking about, if you want to go that place, we're talking about pure science. You know, this is not stuff that's being, I don't know, channeled from other planets or anything like this. This is pure science we're talking about. They're falling over their feet with things they're discovering every day. They come up with a new tool like the Large Hadron Collider, and then they send these little particles around. They bash into each other. They go, oh my God, look. and they learn more and more and more and more and more. And as we can see further into the universe with the telescopes and all this kind of thing, so we learn more and more and more. And we're like, oh my God, there's a dark energy out there. What is this dark energy? What is this stuff? Which at one time people would have said, oh, that's woo-woo, that's nonsense. But now everybody's like, oh yeah, I know. I've heard of dark energy. Yeah. What is that stuff? So it's kind of interesting. So that's what I'm going to talk about as a kind of a lead into these things in further shows. And then I'm going to talk about some more, if you like, solid on the ground stuff, because you know the news changes so fast. And I thought, you know, I could do a little section on this, for example, do a little section on Iran, for example, and then I could leave it for a month and come back to it. Oh, no, no, no. It's changing by the day. So I'm going to do some updates on that and some stuff like this, and we'll see how we go in the show, because my experience has shown that every time I do this and I come packed up with all this information and so on, next thing you know, it's 10 to 11 and I'm going to finish in 10 minutes. So anyway, buckle up, get yourself comfortable, pop yourself a cold one, because we got some stuff coming your way and we're going to talk about energy next. Okay, so now we're going to talk about energy, so I better get some energy, hadn't I? Let's talk about, and this is, we're going to start by looking at the different types of energy and that sort of thing, just to get that kind of feel for it and so on. And then we're going to expand from there into the world of woo-woo. No, I'm kidding, really. But the it's interesting because we've got so much that we do know, but in actual fact, it's a fraction of what there is out there. So that's the important thing. Now, energy can be divided by... Oh, and I should mention, right? I'm not an expert in this stuff. I've done some stuff and maybe studied this a bit at, you know, wherever, school and stuff. But the thing is, so if I'm saying something wrong, please put me right at some point. I don't know. Get onto Facebook at Beetroot Radio and just put that right. I haven't got that connected at the moment. Not sure if I can. Because, as I said, I came into an empty studio this time. Never done that before. So it was all very exciting and I feel really good because it looks like, as I said, lights are flashing, we're all going, so it's all good. But anyway, let's get back to energy. So there's two different types of energy in my humble opinion. There's potential energy and there's kinetic energy. Potential energy is any type of stored energy. So it's energy that has a potential to be used. So it could be something like chemical, nuclear, gravitational, or even mechanical. And the other basic type of energy is kinetic energy, which is found in movement. Now, we talked about the Wold-Newton meteor last week, and that had kinetic energy because it fell to Earth. And that kinetic energy was how it killed the laborer, sadly, that it hit when it hit the Earth. And if you don't know what I'm talking about, the Wold-Newton meteor, look it up. But you should have listened to my show, shouldn't you? Anyway, so it also might be found kinetic energy could also be atoms vibrating when they're hot or when they transmit sound waves. And when you think about it, electricity is a type of kinetic energy because it's the energy of flowing electrons between atoms. So it's actually a movement of the electrons and therefore it's kinetic energy. Okay. And one sort of cardinal rule in the universe, as far as we know at the moment, is that energy can shift between forms, but it is never destroyed or created, except at that one point, which was the Big Bang, of course, when all energy was created, assumedly. It's hard to get your head around that one. I struggle with it too. But all energy was created at that point. And from that point on, it's never destroyed or created. So that's a big deal. So if we start looking at potential energy, okay, so the energy, its potential to do something. We talked about gravitational was one. So if you were to move a mass, say, for example, a rock away from a gravitational center, for example, the Earth, it develops potential energy related to the work it took to move it. So if I pick up a heavy rock and I lift it up high, I've had to work hard to do that. But that work is now transmitted, or transformed, I should say, into the potential energy of that rock. If I now let go of the rock, it converts into potential energy. It converts into kinetic energy as it moves back towards the Earth. So gravitational energy pulls it in, and then it develops movement energy, kinetic energy, and it may also develop heat, and then when it hits the ground, it may make a sound, and so on and so on. So you can see the way energy is changing from one to the other, transforming itself, but never being destroyed or created. Another type of potential energy is chemical energy. So chemicals have an innate energy within them that could be released in certain circumstances. So, and this chemical energy exists in the bonds between the atoms of a substance. So if you burn a piece of paper, for example, it converts into the chemical energy converts into heat, light, sound, energy. So you can see it's releasing that energy that's there stored in the piece of paper that was stored in the wood that was, and if you track that back, and how did the wood get its energy? Well, it got its energy from the nutrients in the ground, which were chemical energy, or from the sun, which would be light energy, and so on and so forth. So you can see all these energies are connected. They all just flip and flop and change and this and that, but they're always still there in one form or another. Another one would be nuclear energy. There's one that causes us a bit of grief, right? Nuclear power plants are fueled by a thing called fission. And that's where uranium or plutonium atoms are broken apart. And what that does when you pull them apart, the bonds that are in them are then released, and it produces an immense amount of energy. The sun, for example, produces its energy by nuclear fusion. So fission for the power plants, fusion for the sun, which is where hydrogen atoms combine to form helium, and then they release electromagnetic radiation and thermal energy. And it's fusion that we would like to use for generation of electricity, for example. But I believe at the moment the problem is that this reaction, when you do the conversion from hydrogen to helium, is so powerful and the temperature is so extraordinary. Containment is the big problem. Because obviously if you produce heat, then you can drive maybe using water or something like this, you can convert that to steam, which creates pressure, which drives a turbine, which can then be used to turn a dynamo, which creates electricity. Good stuff. You could use coal to do that. You could use nuclear fission to do that, because that's more controllable. Although you've got to say that's kind of on the limit of our containment technology, because look at Fukushima, which is still Fukushima'd up, isn't it? And that's a worrying thing, a ticking time bomb right there. But anyway, that's the idea of this kind of nuclear energy. Then there's also like elastic or mechanical energy. So a simple example of that, well, because you've got the bonds between the atoms. So if you strain them with some kind of mechanical process, just like you get an elastic band and you stretch it. Now, the elastic band hasn't changed in form at all, so the atoms haven't actually changed. But what you have done is put some elastic or mechanical energy in there, which is now stored as a potential energy, until you release the elastic band and the atoms can relax to their original position. But they're unchanged. The energy is released, but they stay unchanged. So that's just some thoughts about potential energy. Now, the other type of energy we have is kinetic energy, which is movement energy. So basically, the basic one is obviously motion. When an object is moving, it has kinetic motion energy. The faster it moves, generally speaking, the more energy it has. if that object hits something, it converts that energy into other types of energy, such as heat, sound, potential energy by maybe causing compression of the target, etc. And as we know, if you've ever played ball sports like football or cricket or tennis or whatever, being hit with the ball moving slowly is a lot better than being hit with a ball moving very fast, because the fast ball hurts. And that's because it's got more motion energy, more of this group of kinetic energy. So then you have thermal energy, which we've kind of discussed a little bit. And of course, that's related directly to temperature. So thermal energy is related to temperature, as generally speaking, the higher the temperature, the higher the thermal energy. And this thermal energy is caused by kinetic, that's the movement energy, of the atoms in the substance vibrating. So less thermal energy therefore means less temperature, and that means the atoms have a lesser vibration. And generally speaking, heat flows from a high temperature to a low temperature, so things cool down. Like a cup of tea, you just made a cup of tea, you drink it right then, it's really hot. You leave it for half an hour, it's cooled down. And what it's done is it's transferred, radiated that heat into the room. The room temperature's gone up a tiny bit because the room is big, and the temperature of the tea has gone down because it's lost that thermal energy to the room. Kind of makes sense. There's also sound energy. Sound energy is caused by the vibration of an object and transfers in a non-vacuum substance, for example, air, water, metal. Now, if it was in a vacuum, there wouldn't be any sound because there's nothing for the vibration of the substance to move, and therefore there's nothing to transmit that energy somewhere else. But the example you have where, you know, with air, water, and metal. So, for example, a large metal bell could ring, dong, whatever. That causes a movement of air. And if you put that over a still pond of water, it would make ripples in the water. So there you get the idea of the sound, the metal transmitting the sound energy, the air transmitting the sound energy. You can see how that goes all together. Okay, so then we have a big one, which is electromagnetic energy, which is radiation or light. So it could be radio waves or it could be the light from the sun. And radiation and light energy travels at the speed of light and can be converted into other forms of energy. And the most obvious example of that is probably the light of the sun being converted to chemical energy in a plant. And then if that plant grows into a tree and you take the wood and you turn it to paper and then you burn the paper. Do you see what I mean? There's this constant chain of energy changing from one energy to another energy to another energy. And most of this we don't see, we can't detect. Now, radiation energy, this is what we're talking about now, is kind of interesting because, of course, we have this energy all around us, but we don't see it. It's coming out of our cell phone. I'm sitting here in front of three computer screens. There's a phone over there, a little notebook over here. There's this big old gizmo in the middle here that's doing all the sound and everything. And all of this is putting out radiation. So we're flooded with radiation all the time. And of course, scientists aren't very clear what the long-term effects of this radiation soup we live in is going to affect us. Now, it would be totally your choice, but my choice is not to have a smart meter. And the reason I don't want to have a smart meter is because it's even more, you know, electromagnetic radiation. And I don't want more. I've got enough. I've got TVs and computers. I've got a microwave oven. You know, how does that all work? I don't want any more. So that's one of the reasons I wouldn't have that. But of course, that's your own personal choice. But that's how radiation is. In fact, I sort of have a story about that, which I'll tell, and then I'll play some music, and then we'll move on to some more thoughts about... we've got electric energy yet to do. And electric energy is energy flow formed by the movement of the electrons in a wire, the electrons being the negatively charged particles of an atom. So, for example, in a copper wire. So the movement of the electrons along that wire is a kind of kinetic energy in the sense that the electrons are moving and that creates electricity. Good stuff, eh? But going back to this radiation thing. Now, when I was living in Arizona in the USA, as you know, I was driving to work one morning coming out of my little housing estate where I lived, and I saw a sign in an area where there's a little flood place there to catch the floodwaters, because Arizona doesn't have much of a rain, but when it does rain, it rains like crazy. And as a lot of Arizona is on rock, there's nowhere for it to go. So they build these big sort of areas where the flood water can pool rather than drown in your house and then eventually soak away or go onto the river. So right next to there was a sign that said, oh, by the way, we're thinking of putting up a microwave transmitter, I think it was. It was something for cell phones. It's one of those things. You see them all around the country in England, of course, these big towers that go up and everything like that. And they'd put out this sign and said, we're putting this up. And if you want to know about it, come to this place, 6 p.m. local address, an office block, right? So I happened to be coming home from work and I stopped into this place, 6 p.m., whatever, looked at this stuff, looked at the maps, looked at where this thing was and this kind of thing. And I started asking a few questions because I was interested. And they said, well, we've got a scientist who's going to check this and just to make sure it's safe. And I said, okay. I said, so that scientist is actually going to check it's safe, or is that scientist going to answer a bunch of questions you've given him? And their response was, well, we're obviously going to ask him a bunch of questions related to safety. I said, but you already know the answers to those questions. I said, you already know he's going to give good answers and he's not going to turn around and say, oh, no, my God, you can't use it. And they're sort of like, well, we're not sure. We'll wait until the scientist does it. I said, but the scientist, you're paying the scientist as well. He's working for you. It's not like he's an independent who's coming in to check the safety of this thing. And he's like, oh. And I said, and so can you tell me what data have you got on the long-term effects of this kind of radiation? It's a repeater. So it's kind of like it takes in a signal that's got weakened over distance and then magnifies it so it can travel again. And I said, you know what, have you got any data on the long-term kind of soak that would be happening from the radiation that would come from something like this? This is like across the way there to a house that's like 100 yards away. And a kid sleeping in that bedroom for the next 10 years as he grows up. I said, what would be the effect on that kid's brain, for example? Don't know. Did you ask the scientist that? No. Are you going to ask the scientist that? No. By that time, there's a few people kind of gathered around us saying, what the hell's this guy talking about? Why aren't these guys answering his questions? And I said, and then you decided to put this repeater pole, this microwave, radio wave emitter, in the exact spot where the kids all congregate in the morning to wait for the school bus. And I said, personally, I'm a couple of blocks over. Hey, I don't really care because it ain't going to affect me. But those kids standing underneath in the houses nearby, and then the people are kind of stood around me, start grumbling and saying, yeah, why are you putting that everything? Well, you know what happened? 3 months later, there's the pole. It didn't make any difference whatsoever. That's the way it is. Big business had decided they were going to do it. And I don't know whether anyone kicked up a fuss or just said, oh, well, what can we do? That's progress for you. And then they wonder down the road why their kid gets sick. Or whatever, because we don't know what all this stuff is doing to us. Anyway, I've gone off on a tangent. That's what I do. But anyway, so that's a little bit about radiation. And that's a big deal for us nowadays because, you know, you stick your cell phone to your ear, you put your Bluetooth in your ear, which is probably even worse. Even in your car, although that's a metal grounded or earthed thing, you've got the radio in there, you've got usually got an internet connection in there. It's just on and on and on what's going on with this. And nobody can say what is the long-term effect of what that's going to happen. But then they will say, oh my God, this disease has gone up by 50%. This one's gone up by 1,000%. We don't know why. Well, we'll have to wait and see. We'll have to wait and see. But anyway, that's all about energy. We are surrounded by a soup of energy. So it's very, very important to us. We are in contact with that energy, and energy transfers from one energy to the other. So if I'm standing very close to you, you can feel, I'm not trying to be gross here, but you can feel the heat from my body. If I talk, you can feel that sound energy. You look at me, so you're seeing light being reflected off my face, for example. Scary thought. And that's photons, which are particles of energy. So it's all about energy. Anyway, so we were talking about energy. Now, the thing is that energy is being discovered all the time, as I mentioned. So this is not like you can just say, oh, well, this is it. You know, the Earth is flat because that's the way we see it. And if you sail in that direction too far, you're going to fall off the edge. And then people go out there and sail and don't fall off the edge. And then they have to come up with new ideas. And then people start to think of the world being as a globe. And then it's the center of the universe. And now, oh, it's not the center of the universe because actually it rotates around the sun. And then the sun has its own orbit or whatever, its own movement within its galaxy, the Milky Way, and the Milky Way, and so on and so forth. So there's lots of things we're learning all the time. So you can't just say what we've got is what there is and this is all. This is it. This explains everything. It doesn't. That's not the way it is. A classic example of that was the recent confirmation of the discovery of... before I say that, The scientist who discovered string theory, which I think is the theory of the 11th or 12th level of dimensions, which means absolutely nothing to me. I can conceive of three dimensions? You know, height, width, breadth. I can put time onto that. What are the other ones? But anyway... the 11th or 12th dimension covered by string theory, and they all laughed at this guy, and he was pilloried and pushed out and no one wanted to talk to him. And then suddenly somebody in the establishment said, you know what, he's right. Oh, he's my friend. Oh yeah, when I said that I didn't really mean it, you know. And then suddenly he's back in the fold again. I mean, that's the stuff. And you got to remember that scientists are not open-minded. They can't be. They got jobs. They got mortgages to pay. They got kids to send to college. So they don't go outside the boundaries of what they're given teaching at the university or whatever like this. That is what they stay within. If they're too controversial, they'll get kicked out and they'll get another one and they'll end up without. They'd have to sell their house and get rid of the pool. You know, so science is not quite as simple as it looks. And we're learning all the time. Now, one of the things they learned was this thing called the Higgs field, which you may or may not have heard of. And in the Higgs field is its buddy, the Higgs boson. Now, I don't really understand this terribly well, but let me give you an extremely high level, my level, explanation, and hopefully you'll get an idea of what it is. The Higgs field exists throughout the universe. The Higgs field is accompanied by what they call a fundamental particle, which is kind of like the smallest of the smallest of the smallest. Although having said that, as I've watched quantum theory, quantum physics go on, as they've used the Large Hadron Collider and this kind of thing, it seems that every time they kind of get to a level when they say, well, this is the smallest thing, then they look inside that. And then they look in and find something inside that. And then this is made up of this and this is made up of this. It's all energy. There's no such thing as matter or mass. So how do we get matter and mass? Because we do have the effects of mass, do we not? How do we get that? Well, it's done by the Higgs field and its buddy, the Higgs boson. So the Higgs field is accompanied by a fundamental particle known as the Higgs boson, which kind of springs into existence for a trillion billionth of a second and does something. And what it does, it's used by the field to continuously interact and give mass to other particles, like electrons or whatever. All particles would travel at the speed of light, so I understand, except that the effect of the Higgs boson slows them down like a bullet traveling in water and makes them heavier in that sense. The analogy I heard was it's like walking through mud with welly boots on. And it feels like some force or something is trying to suck the welly boots off your feet. Suddenly they become heavier. They're still the same welly boots, but suddenly now they feel heavier. And it's the same way. They're slowed down by this resistance of movement caused by the Higgs field and its accompanying Higgs boson. Bit like a, as I said, bullet traveling into water. Bullet goes through the air at a certain speed, hits the water, slows down. Same bullet, same weight, but now suddenly it's slowed down. And this is how mass is provided. Because I always thought they're going to, you know, they talk about it being the God particle. But you've got to remember, well, perhaps you don't even know, because I didn't. When physicists and scientists talk about particles, they're not talking about a bit of something. They're not talking about a small piece of a bigger piece, like a particle, like a rock particle would come from a big rock, which came from a mountain. No. Not talking about that at all. What they're talking about is this is now where we get into quantum physics and we get into strangeness. Because what they'll say is, well, no, an electron's a particle, but in actual fact, it's a probability. It's a probability of existence and movement, but we can't really define it because of the Heisenberg uncertainty principle. And it's just like, brain explodes out your ears and you just say, okay, I'm done. Because when I learned about molecules and atoms and stuff like this, it was ping pong balls on bits of stick. Now it's this uncertainty principle and things that wink out of existence and wink back in existence. But my point is this. Is it just goes to show we sure as heck don't know much about anything. So don't be surprised if something new comes along. And that's my point. So another universal field of energy in addition to the Higgs field, and there's a few, but I'm only going to talk about these two, is a thing called the zero point field. Now, what is the zero point field? Well, the zero-point field is full of zero energy, so it's a field of energy, because that's what we're talking about, energy. Zero-point energy was discovered when the energy of a system or a something or a substance or whatever is at a temperature of zero. Now, we're not talking about zero freezing point of water here. We're talking of absolute zero, which I think... Well, it's 0 degrees Kelvin. I also think it's minus 276, or is it 73 degrees centigrade? Minus 270. Let's call it 76. Minus 276 degrees Celsius or centigrade, which is pretty cold. And it's the temperature at which physicists used to think, scientists used to think, chemists used to think, was the point at which all molecular movement ceased. So you could take something like that, you could take all the light away from it, you could take all the radiation away, energy from it, and everything like this, and it should have no energy, but it does, and that energy is called zero point energy. So all systems still maintain fluctuations and have an associated zero-point energy because of their wave-like nature. And I'm not going to go into more of that. If you want to know about that, go and do a master's degree in quantum physics. Whatever. But anyway, that's what it is. And so when a particle is cooled down to the temperature of absolute zero, it still maintains some vibration. Because if you think about it, if those little... Oh, see, it's so complex and then also so weird. Because I was going to say, so those little electrons that are whizzing around, if they had no energy, they'd stop still, which means the substance or the structure of the substance would fall apart, decay or whatever. But of course, that doesn't happen. But sorry, because the electron isn't a little thingy whizzing round. It's a probability of something. I don't know. Whatever. Okay, so but you get the idea, right? That there's this energy right there where there was always assumed there wasn't an energy. So obviously all their equations and so on that were making the assumption that if you started from this point, you'd have nothing and then you could build upon that. No. You've actually always got something, zero-point energy. So it's the lowest possible energy of a system or substance or whatever. It's the zero-point energy. Of course, what that means is zero-point energies then are one universal zero-point field. Because everything has zero-point energy. Because you know there's no such thing as space or a vacuum or nothingness. There's no such thing. Because it's all full of energy. It may not have matter in it, but it's still got energy. Protons of light flashing through it, radiation flashing through it, all this kind of thing. There's no such thing. They used to call this thing the vacuum of space. There is no such thing as a vacuum of space. It's got something in it. This is where the concept of dark energy comes in, because there's something else there. They're not sure what it is. That's why they call it dark energy, because they don't know what it is. And because it doesn't react to light or show light, it's dark energy. But that's where dark energy comes into all of this. So anyway, but the point is, or the point I'm getting to anyway, is that some theories and scientific research try to explain how the mind, brain, brainwaves use this connection to cause matter to manifest in our lives. Now, that's a quantum leap in itself, and we'll come back to that in a moment. But that's basically what they're saying, is that really, because I used to, I told you that I used to go to college and so on and so forth, and I would meet a lot of these people who are more on the edge. And you could say more enlightened than me. That would be okay. And they would say, oh, we're all connected. Well, we are all connected by these universal fields of energy. We are all connected. So does it make sense that if I make a little change to my field of energy over here, in a tiny, tiny, tiny way, that's also going to change your field over there, because the fields are connected. I send out a ripple like dropping a rock in a pond. The ripples, although they may be much, 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 much smaller, reach every border of that pond. Ah. So the concept is that thought energy, thoughts equals energy. So that's a thought energy. So thoughts equal energy, and energy equals matter. Because we've already said that. There's no such thing as matter unless it's acted upon by the Higgs field and the boson and all that stuff. So thoughts equal energy, energy equals matter. Conclusion, thoughts can become matter. Whoa, we're getting into some stuff here. Wow, we're right on the edge now. And this presents the subject of manifestation of the future, and also some discussion into the nature of thought energy, which of course is what my wife was talking about. The idea that a billion people all focusing their thought energy towards peace, some positive outcome, all this kind of thing. That much juice, that much energy, could it make a change to things? Because there are various people that said they have ways of measuring these things and they've detected changes in some kind of energy. And I'll be honest, I don't understand this. I need to research it. But when things happen, like the death of Princess Diana, 9/11, stuff like that, there was such a shift in the thought energy of the human beings in the planet that it changed things. Changed the energy of the planet, which therefore changes the energy of the universe. Wow. Where we go with this? And then you got to ask, could thought energy then be the essence of an individual? Is that energy the soul, the spirit, the conscious? And then let's throw another one in there, as I've totally blown your minds. Because if thought is an energy, which it is, then does it need to be in the brain? Or does it exist maybe in a field that is around and through us, which could also be the zero point field? Absolutely. It's fascinating stuff, this. Because it all comes from a basis of science. That's the other thing. I mean, you know, it's not that I'm making this stuff up. It all comes from science. And who knows that whichever theory that is being questioned or whatever like this could be proved completely correct and fits in with everything else tomorrow. So we were just talking about, is the mind actually contained in the brain? And the brain is physical. The mind is not. And what I found interesting, I was actually kind of cruising through some research on this, just because that's what I do, because I haven't got a real life. And I found this study, because neuroimaging, right? So that's where they use some machine to map the areas of the brain that are activated under certain stimulus, right? So if you're scared, bing, 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 these pieces light up. And if you're feeling good, bing, bing, bing. And if you got pleasure, bing, 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 these other ones light up, and so on and so forth. So they can say, oh, this area of the brain deals with this, and this area breeds the brain to that, right? So they knew that neuroimaging studies showed that there were three particular parts of the brain that are necessary for self-awareness. I am, I think, therefore I am. That was René Descartes, wasn't it? Gosh, we're getting classy here. However, a recent study was carried out because they found this guy who'd had this viral disease, poor guy. So let's not treat him like I was going to say lab rat, but you shouldn't treat lab rats like lab rats either, should you really? But anyway, never mind. This guy had this viral disease, nobody's fault, and it destroyed the three parts of his brain that neuroimaging had said or stated or indicated were as necessary for self-awareness. And they all thought, oh, this is it. This is going to prove that our theories of neuroimaging are correct. And in fact, what it did was the reverse. It actually proved that they weren't correct, that they really didn't address the issue that was going on, because the fact was he was self-aware. And there are some extraordinary things where people have their brain damage when they have strokes and everything. They lose one half of their brain and then they continue to lead a fairly normal life, although their way of thinking changes somewhat. And some of them almost improve, especially when they use what they call the left-hand side of the brain, the logical, analytical side, and they just go on to the creative, imaginative side and can come up with these wonderful ideas. I mean, wouldn't that be fantastic? But anyway, so that's the point. This real-life example showed that this neuroimaging, this idea of saying, you know, that, oh, the brain is this and the brain is that, and the brain is this. No. And the question would be is, well, perhaps the brain hasn't got that direct limit with the mind. And we'll talk about this at some future show or something like this. But it's interesting, I think, that some theories suggest that the mind or some parts of it actually exist outside of the physical body. And even if it was within the physical body, it's still within the fields that are the universal fields. The one we've been talking about is the zero-point field. So it's in connection with this thing, this field that permeates the whole universe. Could this... We're back to... I love this analogy. You know, the ancient alien one that I keep going on about. It's like, oh, God, he's going to go through that ancient alien thing again. You know, the bit at the start of the program. I'm only doing this because I'm sure there are new listeners signing up every time. But they say on the ancient alien program, many ancient alien theorists believe that ABC. What if it were true? And that's kind of where I'm going there. What if we are connected directly to the zero point field? What if that is the connection with the rest of our of the universe and this kind of thing? What if could this explain many areas or many aspects of the paranormal, the supernatural? Could it explain perhaps telepathy? Could that be a transfer of energy between two people or whatever? Huh. Could it be? What about something like, I don't know, remote viewing? Could that be something that was existing because of a transfer of energy? Could somebody have been projecting their energy or receiving their energy from a remote spot and be able to do it? Because some of those remote viewers are incredibly accurate when you consider they're not actually seeing a thing. I mean, could that's remote viewing. Energy healing. There are thousands of years of evidence of the effectiveness of energy healing in certain circumstances. Maybe that's one of the reasons this exists. Maybe that's one of the reasons that can work, is because of this energy transfer, because it's somehow sucking in some of that energy from the zero point field. Because although the energy that's in the zero point field is teeny weeny 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 weeny, it's universal. And in mathematics, it's simple. If you add universe times infinity to an equation, it becomes infinity. That means there's an infinite amount of energy available through that field. And I got to tell you, a lot of people have been working on this, and some of them say... a lot of them have been debunked, but some of them say they've created perpetual motion machines. I know there was one guy, I can't remember his name, but he created a vehicle that ran on water, and it did something about converting the atoms of water or something like this, and then releasing the energy, just like you would be doing in a nuclear generator or in the heart of the sun, changing around the connection of those atoms and releasing the energy from the bonds that are between those atoms. And of course, then, and why not? But of course, then you've got the other side of things, because some conspiracy theorists say, oh yeah, all that's been done. And it's right next to the Ark of the Covenant in that big old warehouse inside. You remember the movie, Raiders of the Lost Ark? You remember that big old warehouse, which is where the Ark of the Covenant ended up, in a crate with all these other boxes full of stuff? Maybe it's in there. Or maybe the Ford Motor Company or the Honda Motor Company or whatever have bought it up because they don't want it on the market because they got cars to sell, for God's sake. Or maybe Texaco or Shell or one of those companies have bought it up because they got oil to sell. Well, anyway. Here I go. Anyway, so, but you know, there's energy healing, there's clairvoyance, which is somebody who uses extrasensory perception. Perhaps they're picking up vibes or energy coming through the zero point field or something like that. Ghosts could be explained that way. Spiritualism itself, life after death. If we're all made of energy and that energy is never destroyed or created, what happens to the energy that is us? not the physical thing that we are, the meat that we are or whatever. Not in that guy's case, the lobes of his brain that got destroyed by the virus, and yet he was still self-aware. Maybe that part of us continues to exist. Maybe it could get trapped somewhere, which would be a ghost. Maybe it goes somewhere else, which would be spiritualism. Religion could have taken those ideas and then added some rules on it and everything like this, so people do as they're told and give money to the church. Maybe that could have happened. And there's things like mediumship, where people say they contact the dead. And I've seen some mediums, and they've just gobsmacked me about how accurate they were. I'm not saying they were real. I'm not saying they were true. But I was absolutely floored by their accuracy. How could they know? Fascinating stuff. Fascinating. Interesting. Well, we've talked about energy and we've had so much fun, haven't we? Yes, we have. It's time we got back to the normal. No. But we're going to talk about Brexit. Because I haven't talked about Brexit on this show, and it is a big deal, and it affects all of us Brits, and I'm a Brit. And I'm like you, and you like me. You know, we're kind of all in this together. So let's get back to Brexit. And, you know, when Brexit started coming along and they were talking about the referendum and stuff like this, I was actually still living in the United States. And my first take on it was like, oh, God, we need to stay in the EU just because of the financial implications, because we're attached to this large market. It gives us much more negotiability and all that kind of stuff. It's a lot more complicated than that, I know. And then I thought, well, yeah, but, you know, it's Britain. You know, it'd be great for Britain to stand on its own, be its own country, make its own decisions, stuff like that. There's stuff on both sides I do know. So I'm not sure where I sit on this, except that I'm a little bit scared. Yes. Let's go through it and you'll see why. Anyway, so Prime Minister Theresa May used a speech in Munich in February to signal the desire for continuous close security and defence cooperation after Britain leaves the EU. Oh, now, when they were doing the referendum, the leavers, right, were driving around this bus, and on the side of the bus it said, we will save something like £386 million by leaving the EU in fees that we have to pay them, and so therefore we will be able to pay that to the NHS and solve all our problems, which would have been great if it were true. Or, I'm not necessarily saying it's true, but it's a little more complicated than that. And there are other things that have come up that we're like, oh, my God, you mean we can't do that anymore? And this is an example of that exact thing that's going to cost a heck of a lot more than £386 million. Because we got in a row with the UK's participation in a thing called Galileo. And Galileo is the satellite navigation project that has raised questions over the partnership. Now, in March 2018, the European Commission announced that the UK may be excluded from the project. And since then, they've actually said, yeah, that you will be excluded from the project following our exit from the European Union. They also instructed Airbus to relocate the Portsmouth Ground Control Centre to an EU state. So in other words, they're pulling it out. We've paid money into this. British officials have been reported to be seeking legal advice on whether they can reclaim the £1.4 billion invested by the United Kingdom of the €10 billion spent to date. Now, one of the aims of Galileo is to provide an independent high-precision positioning system so that European nations do not have to rely on other peoples. And the ones we rely on at the moment are the Russian GLONASS, Chinese Baidu, or the US GPS systems. And of course, those countries, particularly the last one, could disable them or degrade them or do something with them at any time, and then we'd be in trouble. All the whole of Europe would be in trouble. But we care about the UK, right? So we'd be in trouble. And it affects a lot of different things, but one thing I noticed that it affected was the UK nuclear deterrent that we fought so hard to keep, and I don't know why. Well, I don't know. Actually, we might get into that later on tonight. Actually, there might be a very good reason to be keeping our nuclear deterrent. Well, with the way the US are acting at the moment, it does seem that if you've got nukes, you're okay. If you haven't, you're in trouble. But anyway, I'm going to talk about it later if there's time. Time, as usual, is cracking on. So let's move along. The nuclear deterrent doesn't... Well, a potential problem is that it does use GPS for its pinpoint accuracy. So it could affect the UK using Trident. And the GPS, as I said, makes it more accurate. The missile does use a kind of stellar sighting guidance and inertial navigation system to take readings from the stars. And I had to smile when I heard that, because it was like just imagining one of those old wooden ships with a guy with a sextant looking up at the stars. Ahoy, matey! 3 degrees to port, Mr. Coxswain. Aye, aye, Captain. And they're turning the big wheel as he's looking up at the stars. And that's what we use to guide our nuclear missiles. Not exactly. But, of course, that's part of the problem, is it could be turned off. And when you consider that the missiles are held in a communal pool at the US Strategic Weapons Facility at Kings Bay, Georgia... So they're not even our missiles. We actually release them from them. And the US also control the GPS, which isn't the complete navigation system, but it's certainly part of it. The USA pretty much have a big hand in that, don't they? And they seem at the moment to be quite okay with telling countries what to do under threat. Anyway. And GPS also plays a part in the accuracy of cruise missiles. Because when they talk about these things, they say, oh, yeah, it can fly like a Tomahawk missile, right? Got it, cruise missile. That can fly, let's say, 1,000 miles and hit something the size of a single car garage. Because of GPS. It's got other systems, but that's what makes it accurate. You know, who knows what would happen if they hadn't got GPS. That's what I'm saying. That's all I'm saying. So anyway, of course, there's Brexit and space. Because Galileo is offering initial services. It's a major achievement for Europe. And it's the first delivery of our recent space strategy with the EU. And there's this guy... European Commissioner, Elżbieta Blenkowska, doesn't matter, responsible for internal market, industry, entrepreneurship and SMEs, who also said, this is the result of a concentrated effort to design and build the most accurate satellite navigation system in the world. It demonstrates the technological excellence of Europe, its know-how and its commitment to delivering space-based services and applications. No single European country could have done it alone. Well, the UK thinks it can. I have to be careful. I was in the Royal Air Force, right? So sometimes I kind of snigger a bit about the standards of the Royal Air Force and stuff, because I saw some stuff. But I also saw a lot of good stuff, too. I was in the computer industry at the end of my time in the military and working in IT. And I remember thinking to myself when I'd got lined up with a job in the United States, and they said, you know, and I thought, oh, it's going to be fabulous going over there and moving into the American IT and, you know, because all the stuff that we have to deal with, because it's the military and it's the Air Force and it's, you know, well, I'm going to be in this super tech environment. It's going to be fantastic. And then I moved to America and admittedly went into the healthcare system, the IT systems of the healthcare systems. And it was worse, I got to tell you. It was a heck of a lot worse. It was antique. But there we are. Anyway, so there's this idea now being run about having a UK NASA. Well, it's kind of silly because NASA stands for North American Space Agency. Well, how can they have a UK NASA? That'd be UXA. So we'd have an UXA, and that'd be great. They've got NASA, we got UXA. I like it. It's brilliant. And that would be run as a wing of the RAF and work on an entirely British navigational system once we get frozen out of the European Galileo system in response to Brexit. And now listen to this. The Ministry of Defence announced plans for its own £4 billion satellite navigation project. I didn't see that on that bus, right? I probably only saw one side of the bus. It said £386 million will be saved from the fees we pay to EU. And we'll be able to give that to the NHS. But sorry, we're going to end up paying £4 billion. What is that? Over 10 times more. Because when we pull out of projects like this, that's going to cost us a fortune because we want our own independent system. Oh, my God. Anyway, the RAF will explore the military requirements for a UK global navigational system. Now, none of this has been decided yet, but it's kind of on the card. But the bit that troubles me a little bit with this is it says, additionally, British officials will look to collaborate on the project with other close allies, such as Canada, New Zealand, Australia, and the US. And I've got to flip back through my notes and go, wait a minute. Didn't we say that the whole point of Galileo was to provide an independent high-precision positioning system so that European nations do not have to rely on Russian GLONASS, Chinese Beidou, or US GPS systems. And now we're going to reach out to our allies, the US. It's like, well, don't bother. Why spend the money on it then if it's going to be controlled by another country? Ugh. Anyway, I want you to understand, I'm not saying we shouldn't go ahead with Brexit. I don't know. I don't know all the ins and outs, the ups and downs, a lot of the stuff they talk about is secret, stuff like this, you know, that sort of thing. I do know there are some issues, and I think we probably need to be quite aware of those issues. And I'm not sure if the vote would have been the same if we had have been aware of those issues, like the £4 billion that we're going to have to pay to replace Galileo, the GPS project. But nevertheless, I believe in democracy and a democratic decision was made, and therefore I'm on board with it and so on. But we must be aware that there are certain things that have to be dealt with. And we must kind of pressurize our politicians, pressurize our people to make sure they've kind of sewn up all these loose things, because I'm starting to wonder, are we going to exit when we're supposed to exit? Or are we going to keep saying, oh, just give us another year. Here's another couple of £1 billion. Can we just stay in a little bit longer? And that sort of thing, because some of these things are really, really, really big issues. Are very important to you and to me. So anyway, let's have a look at some of them. Let's freak you out. No, I'm kidding. But I mean, yeah, I think we just need to be aware. Now, okay, so one of the big things is defence and security Brexit concerns. We've already talked a little bit about our nuclear deterrent. We've already talked about quite a bit about the Galileo system, the GPS system. One of the things is information sharing. Now, because we're, well, Brexit will mean modification of participation in certain agencies, like the EU Law Enforcement Agency and the EU Legal Agency, which means there's going to be disparities between laws and stuff like that, because laws in one country will be different from laws in the other country, and there won't be a European central kind of command to resolve those issues. But law enforcement. Now, one of the problems they've been having with Russia, for example, is Russia has a law that it will not extradite Russian citizens. That's their law. Which is a problem when we want to get hold of some people, like, for example, the people they accuse of killing an earlier Russian spy, Litvinenko, I think his name was. And they have requested extradition of the two people they think might have done it. And Russians said, nope, we don't do that. To that kind of thing. But, you know, law enforcement agencies, of course, we are in an age of international crime. We are an age of immigration, where crime comes across from countries and stuff like this. We've got human slavery going on, you know, where people are coming from other countries. A lot of that communication now is going to get an awful lot more complicated. There's also things like the EU arrest warrant, you know, which is where I think somebody, if they're arrested in an EU country, then they are, in a sense, arrested by every country that's in the EU and therefore can be transferred to the country that wants to talk to them and stuff like that. There's a good side to that, a bad side, depending on whether you're a criminal or not, right? And all those shared databases. And I mean, one that jumps up immediately is the air passenger database. And now, that is far from perfect, but if you're trying to control people traveling around the world and that sort of thing like this, and you don't want to allow potential terrorists, for example, to travel by air, because they might have something in their bag or their sock or down their underpants, I don't know, we won't share that information anymore, or at least we will, but it'll have to come through a different route. So all of these are important for working against crime and against terrorism. There are things like EU defence initiatives, which are a concern. Because the EU's been trying to develop a stronger sense of communal defence. They have toyed with the idea of creating an EU armed force. Good, bad, I don't know. But they've toyed with that idea. But the UK, after Brexit, will have to balance the... And here's the trick, you see. The UK, after Brexit, will have to balance possible participation with the resistance from the United States, who want to protect the military-industrial complex interests and participation in NATO, which is the US foot in the door to Europe. Because that's one of the things the UK provided to the US, which is why I think, humble opinion, which is why I think Barack Obama made that statement of being back of the queue, because they needed the UK to get this jump foot in the door to Europe. Now they haven't. We're just another little island about the size of Illinois, which is one of the medium-sized states of the United States. That's all we're going to be. Anyway, there's going to be more involvement with the United States. Unfortunately, it seems that at the moment, they're proving that they don't honour contracts, they don't honour agreements, and they, in any project that we jointly work through for them, because the EU's, we're now no longer part of the EU, so the US is going to be our best ally, that's going to put them in a position that they can use sanctions against us any time to force us to do their bidding. That's the bit I don't like. That's the bit that worries me. everything else is good. You know, let's be British for the British. Let's maybe reduce immigration. I don't know. But that one worries the heck out of me. Because look at what we've got. Anyway, enough on that. Don't want to get into it right now, but there we are. So the other concerns, what other concerns are there? Well, there's foreign affairs. A con of that is that because we're an EU member, that kind of limits Britain's international influence. But then as a member of the EU, we're part of a 500 million, half a billion population of people, which carries its own kind of inherent strength, power, and so on and so forth. United States has 320 million. You know, China has 1 point something billion. India has a billion. It's all to do with size and resources and stuff like that. And we're going to become very small. Sovereignty. Now, Britain, obviously, would have more control over its laws and regulations, and we'd hope that the people who run the country and the monarchy and the deep state and all this lot would be good at all their rules and everything else, because if they cheated and made things bad for us, we'd have nowhere else to go, because we wouldn't be able to go to the EU Court of Human Rights and stuff like this, because we're not part of the EU anymore. We would have more effect, the government would anyway, or the people that control things would have more control of laws and regulations and stuff like this. But then again, we were able to opt out of certain parts of this sovereign thing. We said we don't want the euro. We don't want the euro. We kept the pound. I mean, you know, we didn't. We had a different agreement on the Schengen agreement, which is to do with people passing from one country to another. And we didn't accept enforced migrant quotas. So we're kind of showing that we had that kind of sovereignty. So I don't know what the difference is going to be when we move out of the EU. But anyway, we'll find out. Security, we've talked about that a bit. Britain's domestic security would benefit more from greater border control, which we would have because now we've got a border with the EU, so it won't be quite so easy to just come over. Because it was easy. I mean, I remember one time my dear lady wife decided one day we should go. We were in London, right? And she said, oh, let's go for lunch in Paris. Because this was a wild thing to do, right? And don't think we do this all the time. But it was just such a wild thing to do. Yeah, let's do it. So off we went on the old channel there and across and went to Paris and had something to eat there and then came back. It was fabulous. It was really kind of cool being able to do that sort of thing. And it was so easy. Why? Because we got European passports. Just flashed our way through and everything like this. No strip searches, cavities, stuff like that. None of that. EU. Okay, through you come. So, I don't know. But anyway, that's the kind of cool thing that might disappear somewhat. Although, to be honest, I don't know. I was never travelling around when we were pre-EU. I don't know. Anyway, it's another area for concern. Well, it's an area we need to sort out. It's an area we need to negotiate and come to a good agreement with the EU so we don't lose the good stuff we had from the EU, but we are able to gain some of the good stuff we gain for not being in the EU, which is what they always call cherry picking. And, you know, they basically said, well, we're not going to let you do that. But anyway, we'll see. We'll see. Now, money. There was this big thing about money, you know, the number on the bus and all that sort of thing. And whereas Britain contributes billions of pounds in membership fees to the EU every year, which is true. It's a fact. You have to pay to contribute. You have to pay and contribute to be part of that system. However, the EU provides Britain with billions of pounds of investment every year. And we are seeing countries pulling out of Britain. We are seeing companies pulling out of Britain because now it's no longer a foot in the door to Europe. it doesn't have the same value again. So a new company coming in and saying, where are we going to put our HQ or whatever like this? They'll probably go for Brussels or somewhere like that. They won't want it in London, which would have been the natural choice, because now London's not going to have that easy control as part of the EU. Although I got to say, to be honest, money talks, right? And if there's money to be made, oh, they'll find a way. You betcha. And London at the moment is, as I've mentioned in a previous program, the City of London for sure, is one of the two great financial centres of the world. US is the other one. And that ain't going to disappear because there's all those links, all those connections. There's money to be made. So I don't think it'll just fall down on its knees because people won't let it fall down on its knees. But it's the truth of it, you know. It's a push, you know. We pay billions to be in the the European Union, but it gives us billions in investment. So we'll see. And then there's stuff like trade. Because leaving the UA, the EU, it keeps Britain from fully capitalizing on trade with major worldwide economies like Japan, India, and the UAE. So, because it's a bigger force, it's got more bargaining power, it's got more stuff like this. Although the UK might be able to provide a lot more regulation-free or easier regulations or stuff like that, which couldn't be done when you're held by the EU system, which is why this customs thing is really quite a big deal. Because obviously the customs is very important. Goods coming in and out of the country, we need to make that as slick a system as we can, but we also need to make it secure. Well, it was a lot easier when it was the EU because, in a sense, we were all part of the same organisation or cooperative, whereas we can now be a foreign country from the EU and the EU will be a foreign country to us. So that's the kind of thing. And I forgot to mention, actually, one big thing is the problems with the border with Ireland. Because Ireland, they're our buddies. What's up? You know, and it's like, now suddenly we let's talk of maybe we have to have a hard border and everything because they're going to be EU. I'm just picturing it. They're going to be sat on the border eating their brie and their foreign lager, French lager or Belgique lager or something like this. And looking over the border at us who can't afford French brie because we're not in the EU. Who can't afford Belgian lager because we're not in the EU. I don't know. Where's the Guinness factory? Don't let them get the Guinness factory. I don't know. It's just, that's a scary thing because, you know, the Good Friday Agreement, a lot of those issues went away. Border issues were agreed upon, how that would be dealt with. And now we've got this thing coming along and it seems like nobody really has a clue. Plenty of people are saying, oh, it can't be this and it can't be that, but they're not saying what it can be. It's scary, you know, and because Ireland's always been thought as kind of, I'm going to say part of Britain from a human being perspective, not a government perspective, but from a human being perspective, they're part of us. I don't know. But anyway, so that's the bottom of that. Now, business. EU subjects Britain to a lot of bureaucracy. But having free trade within the EU also removes barriers. So our trade with the EU is going to change fundamentally because we're not going to have that mutually agreed barter and exchange and all that kind of thing going on. We're actually going to have, again, we're going to be dealing with foreign countries. They're going to be foreign. We're going to be foreign. And I'm not quite sure how that would work and whether that would be good for us or not. And all these things need to be answered. That's really what I'm saying. It's not something we can't overcome, I hope. And I hope we'll be able to overcome it in a way that'll make things better for us than they were before. I'm just saying, we got all this stuff going on. Jobs, employment, whatever, could improve with new global agreements, because now we're not restricted by the EU and we don't have to follow their laws and so on. However, jobs that are linked to Britain's membership of the EU could be put at risk. In other words, jobs that exist or are facilitated because of the EU and the borders, the ease of border crossing, stuff like this, because of that, now we're going to be out of that agreement. I mean, it's, yeah. And then finally, on my section on this, is consumer goods. I said my thing about the Irish sitting across the border eating French brie and Belgium lager. I mean, the British pay hundreds each year because of policy decisions which drive contributions and subsidies. I mean, we've all heard problems with, like, having to subsidise, I don't know, French farmers. Let's just pick that one out of the air. Stuff like that, and vice versa. You know, but of course, for French brie and Belgium lager, we're going to lose those lower prices. And it's funny because we went into my wife and I went in. We were doing the shopping right in a store. That's all I'll say. I won't say which store. And we're looking at making a change from using kind of vegetable oil spreads to actually going back to butter, because we've seen a lot of evidence that says that, you know, animal fats ain't that bad for you because they're natural. They're what we used to eat. And some of that other stuff is not that good for you and so on and so forth. So we're going to try it. So we're kind of going back towards butter. Obviously, we want butter that's just butter. So it's just made with milk, salt-free, and doesn't contain anything else like dextrose, which is one of the things they tend to put in there, and, you know, artificial sugars or processed and refined sugars or hydrogenated high fructose syrup or something like that. So anyway, we're thinking of going back to butter. And it was interesting that the butter we found that was the purest butter for a decent price, you know what I mean? That was just kind of pure. It was made out of milk and that was it. And so on was a brand. What was the same brand that we used to buy brie in the United States? It was the same brand. And this was a good brie. Low market, so it was fairly economical in price. But it was a nice kind of brie to have around, you know, for putting a sandwich or cooking or something. And it was interesting that it was the same thing. And I remember saying to my wife that, you know, gosh, will we be able to afford this butter after the EU? Because it's all over the packet. Because this particular packet, I think, was from Spain. Well, it says all about it being part of an EU this, EU that, EU this, EU that. Well, we won't be part of that. So that would have to be imported as foreign butter. You see what I mean? It's that sort of thing that's coming up. I don't know. Syria. At speed. On the 25th of April 18, the OPCW, that's the Office of, I don't know what they are, Protection of Chemical Weapons, fact-finding mission was deployed to Damascus to gather facts in connection with the reported use of chemical weapons in Douma. This was the big one in the Syria Arabic Republic on the 7th of April. And this is something I didn't know, that the OPCW coming to, and it's the Organization for the Prevention of Chemical Weapons, that request came from the Syrian government, right? Not many people mention that, but they actually asked them to come and say, hey, check this out. They're telling us we used chemical weapons. Anyway, So due to the Syrian security situation, the team was only able to visit Douma on the 21st of April. The team also interviewed some people related to the Douma incident who were brought to Damascus. The FFM team, so that's a fact-finding mission. Oh, and by the way, this is a fact-finding mission. The OPCW team that came to check out the nerve gas in Salisbury was not a fact-finding mission because that's a full-blooded investigation. It was what they call technical support. But we'll talk about that some other time. But it wasn't the FMM team that came. It was a couple of techies. Anyway, so they did another visit to Douma. They got the samples. They're going to carry them back. They're going to check them out. It's impartial, based on interviews, based on relevant people, findings from the site. The information should be available 3 to 4 weeks time from the date of that, which is probably any time now, actually. However, without anyone verifying that a chemical attack occurred, without anyone verifying what the chemicals were, without anyone verifying who actually did the chemical attack, doesn't matter, because on April the 14th, the day before the OPCW team arrived in Syria, the UK, US and France fired 105 missiles at Syrian ground targets because of their use of chemical weapons. Now, it was not approved by the UN. It was not approved by the UK Parliament. It does seem that the timing of that strike appears to have been chosen to avoid any democratic process that might have said no. That is pretty scary. Okay, so with that dark note, please enjoy the rest of your Saturday night. This is Andy Y with the Andy Y Show, looking in between the lines, bringing you the stuff that other shows don't. Trying to give you something to put in that little trapdoor in your head to keep your mind active and open. And that's the main thing, being open-minded. It is my pleasure and privilege to be able to give you this information. Don't hesitate to contact us and so on. As I said, I'm not on next week, although they may play a recorded program. But I will be back the week after that with something even more exciting, of course. So please have a great weekend and be safe and be peaceful.